Preface. The face game is the game of pretending to be a person. When we see who we really are, we stop playing the face game and begin living a game-free life, the fruits of which are love, joy, and peace. This game-free life is also known as liberation, enlightenment, salvation. Douglas Harding wrote The Face Game in 1968 when he was 59. Up to this moment, he had spent much of his adult life thinking deeply about his identity. Before he saw his faceless true self in India in 1943, he had spent a dozen years thinking and reading and inquiring into the nature of what it is to be human. If anything, this inquiry intensified after he saw who he really was. So by the time he wrote The Face Game, he had spent more than 35 years deeply involved in self-inquiry. The Face Game, therefore, is the expression of a mature spirit, of someone who had for many years been profoundly committed to living consciously from the truth. Reading this book, that maturity and depth shines out from every page. So does his skill as a writer. After first seeing he was faceless, Harding had spent 20 years unable to really share the seeing with anyone. Then in 1964, the secretary in his architectural practice saw and valued what he was pointing to. By 1968, Harding had shared facelessness with about 50 people, who were, as a result, living consciously from their true nature. The face game was influenced by this recent explosion in Harding's life. After so many years on his own with seeing, he was now experiencing a fast-growing number of friendships with others who were also seeing. This was an exciting, inspiring time, both for Harding and for his new friends. The insights in this book reflect Harding's deepening awareness of the power of seeing, both in terms of psychological self-awareness and in terms of how the seeing transforms relationships. I once asked Douglas Harding about how he came to choose the subjects he wrote about. He replied that he didn't really choose. He didn't have a plan. Something would occur to him, would emerge spontaneously out of his true nature, and he would follow it up and see where it led. Sometime around the beginning of 1967, Harding came across Games People Play by Eric Byrne. Harding's wife had borrowed it from the library, and Harding, seeing it lying around the house, had picked it up and read it. One thing led to another. Reading Byrne's book led to writing an article. In The Face Game article, Harding introduced a new level to Byrne's idea of psychological game playing. In the world of transactional analysis, people were coming up with new games one after the other. But Harding looked beneath all the games and identified a master game. It was a brilliant analysis and reframing of the whole idea of game playing. Harding placed the transactional analysis attempt to liberate oneself from psychological games within the deeper context of spiritual liberation. The liberation from all psychology. The liberation from being a person. Harding sent his article to Byrne in San Francisco, who published it in the Transactional Analysis Bulletin in April 1967. It was the longest article published in the bulletin up to that date, reflecting the importance Byrne placed on Harding's contribution. But then another idea must have occurred to Harding, emerging out of the creative void within, because he then expanded the article into a book, the book you are now listening to. But here's a curious thing. I met Harding in 1970 and became a close friend. I knew the Face Game article well. Harding had copies he used to give away to friends. In fact, in the early 1970s, just about everyone in Harding's, by then quite large, circle of seeing friends would have known about it. But none of us knew about the book by the same name. The first time I became aware of this book was when I was looking through Harding's papers and manuscripts sometime after his death in 2007. What a surprise! A substantial, complete typescript carefully bound in hard brown covers. a well-kept secret. I asked around, and none of Harding's close friends knew about this book, including his second wife, Catherine. This is all the more astonishing because it is a very good book. It's not something you would want to hide away because it doesn't come up to scratch or isn't finished. This is vintage Harding, a masterpiece. Why did he never mention it? Perhaps he was intentionally leaving it to be discovered later. If so, it could so easily have been neglected or lost. Anyway, it has now come to light, I suppose at just the right time. The Face Game is a powerful, inspiring book. There are many, many jewels in it. I will not try to highlight them here, but will leave you the pleasure of finding them for yourself. However, there is one thing about the book I do want to mention. Harding accompanies his text with quotations from many great mystics from a number of traditions. Lots of quotations. How well read he was. But he makes clear he is quoting these mystics not because he thinks of them as spiritual authorities, but because he thinks of them as friends, fellow travellers who discovered the same jewel as he discovered. Harding is modest. He claims practically nothing for himself, referring anything of value, any achievement of his, to the source, to the one that we all really are. But from my perspective, Harding's inclusion in his book of so many of the world's great mystics as friends is wholly appropriate. Harding stands amongst them as a friend. He is an equal in terms of the depth and maturity of his experience and the clarity and poetry of his unique voice. I am happy to see this book appearing in the world. I hope it will inspire all who read it. Inspire us to stop playing the face game and be who we are. Richard Lang.